Thank you for being here. We are going to be looking at some poems today, some modern Israeli poems. You'll have the Hebrew and the English. I have to give a caveat on this and say I specifically picked poems that were newer to me, that I hadn't taught before, and they're poems that I feel something about when I read them, that like I feel compelled by, but I haven't solved them. So I have some thoughts about them. I hope that you're going to have some thoughts about them. But this is not like a finished presentation on what I think these poems mean. They're poems that like I feel like there's a lot there, and I would love your help thinking about it. So that's the first thing I'll say. The second thing is the poems that we're going to be looking at today. Sort of the whole premise of the class is with these Israeli poets who are writing in Hebrew. I love these guys that profess to be somewhere on the range of like secular to like maybe they'll allow for like a little bit religious but still secular to like, you know, none of them are gonna like self, none of the poets we're looking at today, they're on a scale of like secular to I observe some things and don't others and I'm angry at God, like that kind of spectrum. But still, despite that and because of that, because of the language that they're writing in and where they're writing, the poems are just so rich in both the language and all the resonance of Hebrew, and rich in like biblical and rabbinic context that they're drawing on. And so I specifically picked poems today that have a lot of resonance, that I think you're going to read them and it's going to remind you of a lot of different references and contexts. And I would like this to be like, we're going to do a little bit of like Beit Midrash time on these poems to try to like pull out what are the layers beneath these poems? What do those layers mean in their context? And what are the poets doing with them? And like, how does that change how we think about these texts? And how does that change how we think about these poems? So that's sort of the context for what we're doing today.
I'm so sorry, I have to return a call.
Okay, no problem.
I feel a small group like I owe you an explanation.
Bye.
Sorry, I'll be right back.
No, I can.
I will close the door.
No. It's okay. When you come in, it's going to be such a dramatic entrance.
I'm sorry, I'll be right back.
So the first poem that we're going to look at, so we're going to do one poem, I want you to do it in Chavruta, I'll give you some time, and then the other we're going to do together. The first poem we're going to look at is a poem from Yehuda Amichai. I'm sure you have some familiarity. Yehuda Amichai was born in 1924, grew up in Orthodox Zionist background, ultimately left the religious life and became an avowed secularist, who then continued to write about God and prayer in so much of his poetry, which is so incredible. So I just wanted to share with you the all these poems that we're reading today. If anyone has this book, it's missing the cover. Creator, are you listening? It's an amazing volume of Israeli poetry on prayer and God. Good intros on the poets, and also has good commentary and explanations. Anyway, I just wanted to share with you a couple of poets about Yehuda Amichai, quotes just to sort of like orient him and sort of where he falls on this religious spectrum. Rafi Weikart says about him, Amichai's God is mainly a silent God who hides his face and does not answer humanity, which seeks him in despair from the depths of war-weary sadness. At moments of the pain of bereavement, both national and private, in the grayish quarters of the everyday. Just sort of that description of Amichai's God, but that there's just such a strong presence of God in his poetry, but it's a God that is absent, it's a God that he's seeking, and it's a God that people are calling out for. And I read in an interview with him that Yehuda Amichai said when he was like close to death, sort of on dying, he said something like that he had never left God, which I don't know what he I think that statement could be interpreted a couple of different ways. I don't know what he meant by it, but I think I would assume it doesn't mean he suddenly became religious in his last part of his life. I don't know. But I understand that to mean, of course he never left God, because all of his poetry was always about God, that even despite that, the distance, he always sort of stayed in this deep engagement. And so that's something that I'm sort of excited and interested in investigating with you. So that's a bit on Yehuda Amichai. So what I want you to do in Chavruta, I've given you some, both after the poem and selections, there's questions, but in general, there's like some guiding questions I want you to use just when we're thinking about the poetry in general. So when you are sometimes learning poetry can be a new form to some of us, sometimes it's an old form for you. But one, when you're reading the poem, sort of first thing, or if you're feeling stuck on how to approach talking about it, share an image or a phrase that stands out. You don't have to have solved the poem, but just share an image or a phrase that stands out to you. Second, share something you don't understand and you want to know more about. Sometimes when I'm reading poetry, like the list of things I don't understand is quite long, but it's a place to start. Third, what is the feeling or feelings that the poem evokes? How do you feel when you read it? What do you think the poet was going for? And fourth, and this is what's specifically exciting for me in the context of this class and this very learned group of people, what Jewish concepts or texts is the poet drawing on? How are they used in the original context and how are they used in the poem? So I just want you to do, in the Chavruta, you're going to do through page 5. You're only looking at one poem, but I've given you a couple of the background sources that I think are animating that poem. The method I would suggest for you is that you start on page 4 and you read the Yehuda Amichai poem, and for this you merit praise. I would suggest you read the poem, then go back to the beginning, spend a little bit of time with the two sources that I've given you. You'll decide how much time you want to spend. I don't want you to, like, this isn't, I don't think you should be, like, on this pute on the first page, like, looking up every single word, although do that if you want to do that. I want you to look at the sources to see, like, what are these and how is Yehuda Amichai using it? And then I would go back and read the poem a second time, and that's when I would really delve into trying to uncover the meaning of the poem. I'll check in with you, but let's say, I think I'll probably give you 20 to 30 minutes on this, but if it feels like that's way too much time, I'll pull you back sooner, but sort of like, you have a good amount of time to start doing this work. Okay, welcome back, friends. So I gave the disclaimer at the beginning that I was specifically picking a poem that I felt compelled by and I was wrestling with, and I heard from some of your conversations that there were parts of it that you felt compelled by and parts of it that you were wrestling with, so hopefully together we will wrestle some meaning out of it.
Such beautiful imagery, but total nonsense. Like, we couldn't make, you know.
I'm hopeful that by the end of the class you will feel something more than just nonsense.
I think we started getting somewhere and you just called us.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, so hopefully you're going to be like on the verge of.
I'm exaggerating, but the beautiful imagery that is very difficult to put together into some cohesive whole.
Well, we kind of thought that he kind of throws everything at you like buckshot. I mean, like almost every line is a different image.
Completely.
And so the question is how you put it together.
Yeah.
Or if you put it together. Yeah.
Somehow it all merits praise.
And for this, he merits praise.
Ah, oh, that was a good one.
Or you merit praise.
Yeah.
Or I do.
Or I do.
We all do. I want to start by sharing, actually.
It's so late in the day.
My wife found this image. I had some Israeli site asked 100, I think just people, to submit a line of their favorite poetry.
Yeah.
You've seen this?
Hell yeah.
This image?
The 100 things? Yeah.
Oh. But one of the people who submitted an image for it is, I think, a graphic designer. And one of the people who submitted one of these lines, and the line of poetry this graphic designer, Yishar Cohen, submitted is, Elohim shochev al gabo mitachat letevel, tamid asuk betikun tamid masu mitkalkel. Okay? Our line, that sounds like God is a mechanic. And so I have the image, so I'll just show you, but then I'm going to pass my laptop around, and take an image. Take a look at it if you want. The image seems to be like God's mechanic workshop. God as mechanic, and like this is what's in his garage. So I thought that was really special to show
with
you.
What's the website?
You'll, when you pass it around, you can...
Is this Sarah Cohen the singer, or this is someone else?
Maybe. Is he also...
Sarah Cohen the singer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the first one to win the Eurovision.
Okay. And also a graphic designer and created that image,
listen,
though? I didn't know. That's it.
He's got a support vote.
I think he did.
Okay.
That's interesting.
So when we were discussing it, Jamie, before we even read the line about seeing the feet, the soles of the feet,
she said it's like sort of fixing the world.
She just said it's like when you're under a car. Jamie said it's like when you're under a car and you're kind of tinkering with it. And then we read the line about the soles of the feet, and that image fits exactly what it's saying, is because it's, you know, you're slid under the car and all you see is the feet. And the engine is the world.
Yeah.
And God's tinkering.
And it's always broken.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like an old car.
Please close the door. Please. Thank you so much. You'll tell me if you're
sorry.
But I think
it's going to turn on that virtual screen that makes that into like a beach scene.
It just fits with that that picture.
Like
it's
that.
Like it's like tinkering under the car and you just see the soles of the feet.
Yeah.
I love the angel wings on the side.
Yeah, the angel wings.
And the heart
with the
bandage. Yeah.
I like the coffee pot.
But it's actually pretty...
It's so Israeli.
I haven't seen it yet, so...
But it's incredible to think, like, if you were to make an image of, like, what God would have in God's workshop... What are the things that, like, what are in God's toolbox? So, amazing. So, I appreciate the mechanic image. Let's actually start at the beginning of the poem so that we can work our way through it, and hopefully we'll make some sense of meaning. Do we have, I know that there are a lot of Hebrew speakers. Do we have any native Hebrew speakers in here? Okay, so otherwise I will just default to my Hebrew in the absence of native Hebrew speakers. B'shtigati hagdola uvetzakati ktana ani choresh. Kilaim, hayiti b'mayim v'hayiti ba'esh, hayiti b'Yerushalayim u'v'Roma ulay niye b'Mekka, ach hapam Elohim mitchabe v'adam tzoek ayeka, v'hiti latecha. Wanted to make sure that I read that first stanza, because I don't know if you caught it, but there's actually a really nice rhyming that's happening, which is like part of the kilaim getting stuck on the second line, is that you get the sound of that rhyming. So... Let's also just hear it. Let's hear it once also. Can someone read the English just of that paragraph?
In my great silence and in my meager cry, I plow mixed seeds. I've been in water and I've been in fire. I've been in Jerusalem and in Rome. Perhaps I'll be in Mecca. But this time God hides and man cries. Where are you? And for this you merit praise.
Okay, so what, like, how are you understanding this stanza?
He's a broken sinner, if you will, like a broken sinner who's wandering around the world, trying to find the, hitting the religious centers of the world, trying to find God but can't, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I see it a little differently. Not broken, but rather multiple. Like he uses kilayim, these two things that are different. And it's just like being in Jewish culture and European culture at the same time. And he's trying to integrate all that into himself.
Cool.
Oh, so
is this the mixed seed?
The wine maker, though.
Sorry, is it the mixed seed that we're not supposed to plant?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's forbidden.
Forbidden,
right.
Yeah.
And yet... mixed up together in him.
I see a lot of role reversal where he has walked away from worrying about observance, whether it's Kilayim, and he's been through the Esh and the Mayim of Unetana Tokef, and he has been in Jerusalem, Rome, and maybe even Mecca, so he's not rooted to any one spiritual center. And it's God who is hiding, and he's now in the position of saying, Ayeka, looking for God, and not finding him. So a lot of role reversal I see here.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Go ahead. I just, Michael, with your interpretation, what is the water and fire then?
No, I'm saying like he's been through a lot of like the water and fire. Yeah, Unetana Tokef, but he's been through a hard life. I think it means.
Because I think that's too specific to be just hard life. Water and fire are dramatic opposites. They have a relationship to each other. Fire makes me think of like the Holocaust or war. I don't know water. I don't know. I feel like maybe there's more there. I don't have an answer. But that there's more there than hard times in the fire and water, because that's not just...
No, but like in
difficult.
Go by water and go by fire.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
We said. Yeah,
but
we
also
that, but
also like in the Vina volcano.
But that's
like
death.
Our,
that's not hard
our
times.
And ancestors went through fire for
he's
you.
He's been in
like,
both.
Yeah.
Saying who might go by this? He's like, I've already been in both of those.
Yeah. Sorry, I haven't
so,
died. I've been there.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't
and all that's very dramatic.
Yeah.
But he's in his silence and his meager crying. He's not being dramatic. He is.
That's why I say he's
laid back.
Well, I'd say he's broken because he can't even, like, cry out. He just has a whimper.
Yeah.
I'd say
well,
just
hold
two,
on. I just want to make
just two
space.
Things.
Yeah.
Just first, I mean, first, water, I mean, because this is, like, a Jewish, biblical allusion here. You know, water is something the Jewish people were saved from, right? So we went through it and emerged from it. And then you can have, you know, Eshel Kivshan, you know, going, the very, whether it's Daniel or whether it's Avram being saved from fire, that these are things from which we're redeemed. And I just was thinking, I mean, I don't know exactly what it's describing, but when he says, my shtikati gadola v'tzakati ktana, to me it suggests his poetic work, right? I mean, that his poetic work is itself choresh kilayim. There's something that his work is a secular project, and in that way it violates the religious life that he was raised with, and yet it's tilatecha, right? It's that somehow through this secular project, this chiloni project of poetry, he's searching for God, and therefore it's God's praise. It seems to me that's sort of in keeping with other poems.
And
sort of,
just to spell out, are
yeah.
you suggesting that the kilayim is that, like, in his work, he's doing the mixing of the
yeah.
secular and the...
Totally, right. I mean, that it is a mixture of what's holy and what's profane. And that's,
I love that.
And his poetry does that a lot, you know.
Yeah. That's cool. And I was also thinking about the Mayim and the Eish, both the Unatana Tokef and things that we're redeemed from. I was also thinking about Mayim and Eish as things that are purifying and things for koshering.
Right,
things
right.
that, like, we go through
okay,
the... Nice. I both like the go through the Mayim and the Eish, and I'm still here, right? I made it. And also, like, I have gone through the fire that was supposed to cleanse me. I've gone through the water, and I'm here.
Which kind of fits better with the statue verse somehow. Like, I don't know. It just makes that make more sense. He's been through like a war almost, like he fought the knights.
Uh huh. Yeah.
And he's
okay. Don't say it till we get there, though. Say
okay.
it. Gotta go.
I'm just trying to make that make sense.
Yeah.
You do have. I mean, you do have in the first verse of the piyut, though. You have ice and fire.
Ah,
and so
cool.
You have water and fire in both.
Thank
with
you.
With angels.
Right.
Really good.
I got the ice for the Nicarer, though.
Yeah, I saw that
yeah,
as well.
Me too.
Also, the light of the Nicarer. So
yeah.
you have the fire and the
yeah.
ice there. So it's contained in something
yeah.
mundane.
So you have this like primal visions of it, sort of like the primal ice and the primal fire, which are then going to come back later through the light of the refrigerator and the ice of the like these sort of like reduction of those images.
So is there a sense of transformative nature? Mayim and Eish are both transformative, and then Yerushalayim, Roma and Mecca are transformative.
Yeah.
You're thinking about the origins of each of the faiths. Like, it's Jerusalem where the Israelites transform themselves really into a nation because the temple
yeah.
is built there. Rome is the transformation of Catholicism, Christianity, and Byzantine Empire, and then Mecca where Islam is founded, which then it's all self-included for him, thinking about what he's facing in the early, you know, late 40s, early 50s
yeah.
of, you know, who are the enemies, and we've gone through all of these enemies,
mm-hmm.
and we are, and God's really hiding this time still.
Yeah.
I don't know, when was his poem? What's the date of the poem? Do you know?
I don't know. I'll look it up while you guys are talking.
Let's
I'll see if it's
dated
in here.
Huh?
I was
Google
thinking
that
the water might also have something to do with the seeds that he's planted. You know, water being the life-giving force that it is, he's planted these seeds, and even though they're forbidden seeds, these mixed seeds, the water somehow gives them life, and the fire destroys from time to time. So he's been, perhaps, or his poetry perhaps has caused a birthing and then a death of some kind, and a rebirthing, you know, a sort of ongoing regeneration of his work, or whatever we're talking about here is not entirely clear.
Or lack
to me,
thereof.
But I think, I like this idea of that you were talking about before. Of this all is his, the mixing of the religious and the secular life.
How do you guys understand the Vehitula Techa? And how do you understand how it's relating to the original Piyut?
Well, is it kind of a sarcastic question here? And for this, your praise?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Why do you think it's sarcastic?
I don't know. Because God's no longer the one who's saying, where are you, that we have to cry out.
Where are you?
Yeah.
Well, although the thrust of that, at least the second stanza, is interesting. I mean, it's interesting to be you, is that somehow we poor sinners in shul, without any ma'asim, our praise of you is your praise, right? So from something that seems profane comes God's glory. That's part of the theme, it seems, of the piyut, and he's saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
From what seems to be profane, nevertheless comes something that is.
I like that.
So you read it like sincerely.
Yeah,
I think
too,
so.
Actually,
I mean, he's always a little ironic, but there's a sense of, you know, all my doubts, all my struggles, all my movement away from you, nevertheless, is to your glory.
I see it a little differently. I think he's turning the piyutic theology upside down. You know, where you are great and we are nothing. He's now saying, no, we're asking where you are. And I'm thinking of his poem where his father used to stand still and make God chuckle, right? And so it's the whole idea that he's introducing human agency here, and by our expressing ourselves that way, it's praise to God.
Awesome.
Yeah, and
again, true praise to God?
True.
I think he meant it sincerely.
Yeah.
I think
it's kind of the same thing, I think it's actually kind of the same thing, because it's that what his project is valid.
Okay, I'm curious to keep bringing that up, of the relationship of this
even though it's not totally kosher, because the mixed seeds are not kosher, right?
True.
nor is Rome or Mecca kosher.
Right, but I think that's metaphor for, you know, holy places, pilgrimage cities, whatever. I don't, Right, but so he's looked elsewhere.
Reinvention.
He's looked in Jerusalem and he's looked elsewhere.
They've all been reinvented.
Okay.
Can I say the first line still?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yes, thank you.
The idea, just these words, like I had to read it a few times, like Sheket and Gadol and Sa'aka and Kana, like those, they don't seem to really.
Yes.
Go together? Like, I would expect it to be the opposite.
Right.
But, so, I think that intentional kind of, like, mixing up of those images also kind of goes with, everything else that's in that stanza of, like, opposites of, like, water and fire and Jerusalem and Rome.
Kilayim.
And then there's, like, the role reversal of God hiding and...
Yeah.
Somewhat a person calling out, like, God, where are you? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's representative of... but it also made me think about, the cold mama deka that's, like, still heard.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of,
mm-hmm.
like, doesn't need to be loud. Like, or maybe these are images that actually do go together, that, like, the whole point of that is that it's heard. I don't know. I just wanted to... talk about those images.
Do you know when this was written?
No, I checked. It doesn't say. We'll have to look it up.
I can just Google it. Do we have service down here?
I think a lot of his early poetry deals with his rebellion against religion. And I think a lot of his later poetry deals with wrestling with what it means to be Israeli at that point.
Yeah.
So trying to figure out where this fits in.
Yeah, where to place that.
I think we've come to rely on that context a lot in studying poetry. And it's kind of neat not to know, right?
I know.
Like,
no, but since I studied with him,
yeah,
right. Well, I mean, that's how old I am. he talked a lot about his personal journeys. So,
for sure.
So I'm trying to hear that voice.
Yeah,
you didn't know there would be somebody sitting that behind your shoulder.
It's like, thank God, his wife isn't in this.
It's age.
Okay. Someone want to read? So, sir, what, will you take the honor of reading the second stanza then? Do you mind, Matt? Can I put you on the spot to read the second stanza?
You just got elevated.
Just got elevated.
I can't do that. But if you read his biography, his first love used to teach Hebrew at JTS. So she was also my teacher, and I had no idea
who's
at that time.
Who's that?
Ruth Zelenziger, Zichra Livracha.
Okay.
So. Anyway, Elohim Shochev al Gabo Mitachad LaTevel, Tamid Asuk B'Tikun, Tamid Mashu Mitkalkel. V'Tik Liro Kulo, Achani Ro'er, Rak Etzul Yod Na'alav, V'Ani Bocheh, V'Hi Tilato.
Beautiful.
So, again, I see the role reversal, because if God's lying on his back, and all he can see are the soles of his shoes. He can't see his back, like Moshe saw his back.
Right. Mm.
Right? Yeah. He's now standing up, and God is down below.
Right.
Again, I see the role reversal there, too.
So this poem doesn't seem to...
Yeah, I mean, I think...
All over the place. Isn't there in the web.
Shall and take your shoes off and stuff like that. Your feet should be on holy ground. And so here we're seeing God's feet.
Mm.
So this this whole thing of... Plan up with the idea that
his feet are shoes.
The tikkun olam here is something that God is solely involved in.
Right, but it's a bit here, a bit there. You keep getting
what's that?
Very Lurianic.
This is not us involved in tikkun olam. This is God who's constantly fixing. God bought a back to Roma, a cheap Italian car, and he is just constantly
tinkering. Right, and what's the sense of that there?
That God doesn't have time for like the individual in stanza one, because God's busy with other things.
Because God's under the car.
God's under the car, yeah.
God's a mechanic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
That's why we have to shout Ayeka.
Right.
Smallly.
Yeah.
That one stanza is in the Mishkan HaNefesh, the Reform Prayer Book for High Holidays.
How about that?
Yeah, really? Just quote that one stanza.
Mm. Which one?
The God the Mechanic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The one that made the list of 100 of the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, I mean, it's a great stanza.
Yeah.
It is.
It reminds me a little bit also of, you know, some people complain that, you know, Chashmal was this thing from Ezekiel, and now it's this banal, it's just electricity, and modern Hebrew takes these exalted notions and makes them every day. And here he's playing with tikkun just that way, right? Like the average Israeli tikkun is what a mechanic does.
Yeah.
But he's aware that in the background is tikkun olam, which is this majestic thing.
It's Gershon Sholem and Rosenzweig. Was it Rosenzweig?
When he wrote to Rosenzweig.
That's our argument right there. Rosenzweig was is not a Zionist, but he was against using Hebrew for daily speech because you're going to turn the exalted Hebrew into everyday speech.
But Amichai does it on purpose.
But Gershon Sholem says, right, but, and he would have known...
That's his whole project.
Amichai would have known Gershon Sholem's writing.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I think it's called bathos or something like that, where you have that effect, right, where you intentionally deflate the power of something, right, and so it's like tikkun, but it's just that, God's a mechanic?
Right, tikkun is like tinkering, yeah.
Right, exactly.
And the opposite, exalting
exactly.
mundane
through
that.
Yeah,
right?
So wonderful.
Is there something about wanting to see all of God rather than seeing his face, which is the original image? He wants to see all of him.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to understand, like, if we go with the interpretation in the first stanza, that there's some seeking going on, which is one of the things that we mentioned. He is not satisfied, and he's still looking for more. And so God showing all would be reaching that level of understanding, but you can't.
Right, and that's why he's crying. I only see. Only
yeah, God is hidden, and Amichai wants more. He wants. I shouldn't say Amichai. The narrator wants more.
He's not a typical Middle Easterner, but the Suliot Na'alayim are not particularly a well-respected part of what you should see on a person.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
No,
like throwing the shoe at George Bush.
Correct.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know if he's playing on that at all, but he's seeing the least respected part.
Meaning that it's shameful to the person who's seeing it, or shameful to the person
who's
being seen?
Shameful to the person who sees it. If I show you the soles of my shoes, I'm being tremendously disrespectful to you.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all we get. It's all we get, and that's why...
That's why the person.
That's why Christ.
And he crossed.
And it backs off from second person to third. Tehillatecha to Tehillato.
Yeah, how do you understand that? Still understanding Tehillato in that same sort of sincere, positive.
Mm.
And how do you understand the switch?
So the name is Vihiti Latecha, but I don't have a date.
Okay, I could have told you the name from this one, but I'm glad you got that.
But then it says in parentheses, Mitoch Piyul Yamim and Minorim.
Where did this Hebrew version come from? Like the internet, or...?
It was well, I mean, the Hebrew's in this book, but I had Morty type it up for me.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like he made a typo. Why do you
no,
ask?
No, because there... No, I feel like, just, when I saw, like, it said Tamid instead of Tamid, I thought maybe...
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't originally, Nimukad, and then maybe there's, like, we're
no, that was
play.
It was copied from this book, and I think it was actually Jeremy that did it for me. He, like, made two typos.
No, it's not a big deal. I just thought maybe if it wasn't, if Amichai didn't actually put Nikudo there originally, then we could, like, play around with, like, Kilayim and stuff like that, because maybe there's other ways to read it, but...
Yeah.
One question, one thing, maybe just with Sulio, is thinking, thinking of like Anim's Mirot, right, in which there's kind of a list of those dimensions by which God is revealed at different times in history, and they're all just Chezionot. I don't know whether that's in the background here, but the idea of, what else does God have that God hasn't revealed in history that now we get to see because of the moment we're in or something? Now, these days we see the soles of his shoes, and that's sort of good enough in a certain way. I don't know. Maybe that's in there.
Not for the narrator, though.
Not for the narrator, but somehow it's Tehillat Toh. It's like he's busy, he's working. Mm.
I wonder about the Tehillat Toh, that this is a stanza. I mean, all of these stanzas, I think, are arguably about like distance and seeking God. But for this one specifically, it's like, God is under the car, all I'm getting are the feet. And that, like, it's that distance that creates the and the third person singular, Vihiti Lato, that there's a disconnect there. I don't know. I'm interested in your sincere reading. It's hard for me not to read this as the Vihiti Latecha, Vihiti Lato is like a subversion of the original intention of the pew, that in the first one, God is absent. I mean, the person, the speaker is seeking them. God is nowhere to be found. God is playing games of hide and seek. And this you are to be praised for, as opposed to the original intention of the piyut, when you were, like, doing these awesome things and yet still... Right, in the piyut, it's like, God is so awesome, and yet God... What the source of God's praise is, God is so awesome, and yet God still cares about us. God still cares to be with us, the lowly, and for this God to be praised. And here, it's like, where even is God? God's not even the picture. Mm-hmm. And for this you should be praised. And here, it's like... God is, on the one hand, there's something so powerful and evocative about the image of God as the mechanic fixing the broken car. So human, but it's also like, it's the world, this like, what did you say? An Italian lemon that God created in the first, like, God created a world that is like breaking apart all of the time, and all God can do is fix it, which means that God is absent. And for this, God should be praised. So it's
that
hard for me not to hear it.
That makes the whole thing make more sense.
Your
interpretation.
God isn't absent. It's just that we can't.
So doesn't have time for us.
God doesn't
have
time
for us.
God's so busy. God doesn't have time.
Fixing
it's
the broken world.
The dad is
here.
God's there.
God's the dad in the garage every weekend instead of at home with the kids.
Maybe there should be a question mark in that case, though.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I said.
No, that's how I... Yeah, that's
but it's not. But he did do the punctuation, right? I mean.
Yeah, true.
Ah, so you're arguing the fact that it's not a question mark.
I just...
It actually works really well with the next line about the trees. It's like... Come on, like, even the trees need a king, right? Like, we're human.
It makes
like,
the whole thing make sense.
We need something, and there you are every weekend under the car. Like,
sarcasm.
Let's be the third stanza then and talk about the trees. Do you want to get...
Can I just say that there's something about... that this is the world. We can long for a world where everything is perfect and God is with us and nothing is broken and all of that, but that's not our world. And this is the world that was created, broken as it is. And for this, we give praise.
Mm-hmm. I think he's struggling with that.
That's why we have poetry.
Maybe the in-between to the, like, maybe that's why the question mark is missing, because the in-between is, so you read this piyut in the liturgy, and he's like, well, not entire, he's not, he's
not totally bought
into
that.
He
wants it to be perfect.
But he's also not completely cynical about it. So maybe there's an in-between.
Or maybe we start in one place and get to another place.
Maybe.
Or maybe we don't. Maybe we keep reading it.
Yeah, because in the end,
we'll
it's really just
about
him and her, right?
Let's get to the end.
But we've all read the whole poem. It's not a secret.
I
want to
go stanza by
stanza.
Do you know if he
continued?
I know he wrote about going to shul as a child. Did he go to shul on Yom Kippur? Do we know? That does change it a little bit. As an adult.
Like,
Like, was he?
He wouldn't go.
Yeah, the one poem where he went on Yom Kippur, he wanders into the it was like Yom Kippur 1967 or whatever. Yeah. He wanders into the old city.
Where there's like buttons, like his father's shop. Yeah, or
yeah,
like
yeah,
shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but isn't aren't there poems about him sitting with his father in shul as a child?
But
yeah.
For
a child,
he's
for sure.
Adult.
Yeah. But it's kind of it does feel like maybe there's like a mature piyut, and I guess one question to resolve is it ironic or is it not? Is can he pray this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, or can he not pray this? Is this sort of like an anti-prayer, or is it actually a kind of a prayer?
I guess I would argue that even something that's an anti-prayer could still be prayer. I just would argue that, I don't know, even, I think even with my reading of, like, it's hard for me to read this as sincere, I think that could still be a prayer.
Mm.
You could still be like, this goes back to, you know, shy and all of
mm-hmm.
Like, you could still be angry and wrestling, and do I really praise you for your absence and for your broken world that you're consumed with fixing and not showing up in my life? And that could still be a prayer.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Because that's our condition.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Someone to read the third paragraph.
Afilu ha'itzim halchu livchor lahem melech. Elef pa'amim התחלתי את חיי מכאן ואילך. בקצה הרחוב עומד אחד ומונה את זה ואת זה ואת זה ואת זה, והיא תהילתך.
Yeah, how do you understand the whole... So I like, Ellie, what you were beginning to offer with the trees. So you were saying it was like a coming out of place of feeling God's absence. I'm not saying God's absent from the world, but like, you know, not being present. And so what you were saying, that even the trees needed a king, and
right.
We need someone.
Right. I mean, yeah, for going that reading. But I feel like there's a lot of other things to unpack by this stanza, too.
But the trees needing a king, the parable, is like the whole parable is about none of us need a king.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like you get what you get what you paid for with a king, the parable was about, right?
Yeah. But yeah.
But in this piece from Judges that you...
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Right.
So at the very end of this paragraph right here, the person that they anoint as king says, but come and take shelter in my shade. So the king offers protection.
Yeah, but he's lying to them.
Well, right, exactly. So in this case, our king...
It's the parable of like the scorpion and the, I don't know, the frog or whatever, the fish that goes across the...
That's
my
nature.
Yeah, that's what I do, yeah.
Right.
But the shepherd who is counting each one of the sheep is a symbol from
from
the...
Yes.
From the Amino Rain. And that's what resonated with me when he's standing on the side of the road counting each one.
And
so
how do you understand the image?
Again, I see... you know, it's he's the one who's standing counting, not God.
Right.
God is supposed to be shepherd counting each one of us.
Yeah.
But again, the role reversal, he's the one who's now standing
but
on the side.
What
is he counting?
How do you know it's him?
A thousand times I began my life from here on, at the side of the road, someone stands and counts.
Yeah.
So if not him, maybe another person, but it's not God who's standing there.
But is it like the J&F guy in the forest counting all the trees that are there, or who, like what? Is the counting true? What are they counting? That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, you might also be able to open the door now. Maybe they're done moving things around.
I think it's more about the idea that we're looking
someone's
for a king, but we don't have one, and it's not God isn't there counting, but someone's.
Someone's paying attention.
Right. There's someone who's counting,
right.
But it's not God.
It's not Uno Tom Talk up with God counting all of us.
If this is the broken guy,
yeah.
Right, who's whimpering, he's saying, "We've got this big void. God is not there.
Mm-hmm.
He's not praying to God, and I don't know if he's looking for God, but there's somebody who's doing the job of counting.
Why
like
is
somebody,
this? Why is it not God?
Because I think that's his problem, that he has not been able to replace the God of his youth.
Omed Echad sounds like...
No, not God. Just Echad.
It was just right. It doesn't say God standing there. It's saying someone, Misho.
Right.
Misho Mecham.
Who's counting?
What are they counting?
Who's being counted?
Yeah.
What are they being counted for?
Yeah.
Nothing in here is...
Did you say nothing? Meaning, wait.
Nothing. There's nothing here...
To give you the context?
To give... a sense of what this has any meaning. I mean, so if you take the original, I mean, the shepherd is counting us,
yes.
We're the sheep under the protection,
yeah.
God is, you know, offering this kind of thing. So there's, you know,
and knows
disturbing
it, knows each one of us personally,
theology
right.
is of it
yeah.
and whatever that I don't want to be part of.
Yeah.
I could say, okay, God shepherd, yeah, me sheep, you know, counting to know the number of the flock as we go through.
And he's not even counting numbers. It's a zev, a zev,
right,
a zev,
right,
a zev.
Right. Right, that it feels like there's a potentially sort of a, like, a meaninglessness. This is a ritual that's happening, but, like, no longer means anything. It's not connected to
right.
the
that's
ritual.
That's why it's kind of like counting the trees.
No,
it doesn't matter, yeah.
The Avodah service, for sure, that word Moneh, like, totally rings for me, like the sprinkling of the blood.
Mm-hmm.
That word is, like, the huge, that, like, repeated 1,000 times
mm-hmm.
in that. And it's exactly what you're saying about, like, a service that, like, doesn't mean much to us anymore, this ritual thing. I don't know. But I feel like that word is, like, too much from that to, like, be ignored.
Mm-hmm.
So
which word?
Moneh.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
but the counting means something to him. So, while the Avodah service might not be meaningful to him, the idea of
counting
all of us in merit individualized attention.
Although we all
and
have the same name, Zeh.
Sure.
We're indistinguishable from each
sure.
other.
Sure.
Which
so are all the sheep.
So what Sean said about how God
so how do
is
individual. We're all individual.
So,
for all.
So, yeah.
It's.
Is there a connection between the line, Elef pamim itchalti et chayai mikan ve'elach, bitzel chob? I mean, are those connected? That somehow the counting is related to starting again.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. That's. I don't know. This one is much more obscure.
So is it maybe? Every is he saying now back every year at the Days of Awe I start over again.
Something like that. Yeah.
Well, there feels a little bit like maybe like the skipping record of like I keep starting over. I keep not getting anywhere. Someone keeps counting. That keeps not getting anywhere. Sort of like even the trees. Even those, like, foolish trees who, like, who knows why they need a king and they're asking everyone to be their king and no one thinks, like, even those trees managed to get somewhere, whether or not it was, like, a good place, we don't know, but, like, even those trees managed to do something, at least they got themselves a king, and I still just keep starting, that guy keeps standing, counting.
Is the melech your god? In other words, afilu etzim halchu livchol ha-melech, right? But I, you know, even schmucky trees want a king. And yet I can't get a king for myself. I haven't
mm-hmm.
chosen a king for myself or something like that. Is that part of what's going on? I don't know.
And if I haven't chosen a king for myself, that's why I haven't gotten anywhere yet. Because I'm back to Yom Kippur again. Is anything really different than last year? I'm still stuck.
Right.
Back
to
square
one.
Here. Yeah.
Exactly.
And, but the Thorn Bush is pissed because it's like the last resort. I don't know. In the tree story?
Yeah.
No, I think the Thorn Bush is... That's what the thorn bush good for, except for poking you. That sort of
it. It protects
right,
what's
well,
inside it.
Like, no, but it has no utility. Like the olive tree gives you olives.
Shade,
like, right.
But doesn't mean to if he came. I don't know.
I think it means it's only
the stories. The thorn bush was really helpful to Brer Rabbit and
Brer
Rabbit.
Oh,
boy. So I don't know. Those are the stories I grew up on. The thorn bush was extremely helpful.
Oh, yeah. But I think it's saying like it's only
but
the rascal should become the politician.
Yeah.
As much as a saying, the trees could find the king. I can't.
Right.
Yeah.
What?
The trees are able to find leadership.
The good people
I
going
can't.
To
right.
go
yeah.
to
and this whole thing seems to be about his
be
search for something that has, is eluding him, avoided his life.
I think it's right. And there's also a connection. It goes back to the first stanza, or the first, right? Where his life is hard, as we said, right? And so, Elef Pa'amim Itchalti Et Chaya, it's like, it's related, right?
It's a pew for
Yemim
Noraim.
Right.
It's a pew for, we think of pouring out our hearts and connecting with God, and God sitting in judgment. There's no God to sit in judgment. There's no God to connect to. There's no God to ask forgiveness of. That void is huge in his life.
And still the question, I think, on this is, like, when he gives it the subtitle of a pew for the Yemim Noraim, whether it's, like, is it actually a pew? Is this actually a prayer? Or is the whole thing a cynical step, like a cynical
mm-hmm.
subversion? Or is it both? Or is it the key line? Is it both? I mean, I think it's probably both.
He's counting the pages of the Machzor until they're done.
At this last
person, how many of you put your finger in the back of the page you're going to get to by the end of that service?
And the Vihi Tilatecha, how are you guys, especially the sincere people, how do you understand Vihi Tilatecha here? How are you understanding
he hasn't given up? He hasn't given up the process.
Trying.
Yeah,
exactly. We keep coming back.
Yeah,
he does give up though.
You know, I wonder just to bring the thing to like Israeli too. I wonder if to me that sounds like mindless military exercises,
uh-huh.
Right?
Right, yeah.
I'm remembering like when I visited a base up in just in the south of Lebanon. One of the jobs that apparently was only for women because only they had the concentration to focus on something like this. It was a weird statement that there was like, you know, there's little like points of light. And you have to figure out who comes across the gate. Inevitably, it's like a wild boar that's running, and it's all a false alarm. But like, there's this incredible tedium to what it is to be in the military. You know, this stand on the road and you're counting. And so that, to me, that's what I'm seeing in that. Like, it's a hot road. My job is just to start again, count again.
Foxtrot. Yeah, that machson.
Yeah.
Okay, let's read another stanza. Will you take this one, the fourth one?
Sure. אולי כמו פסל עתיק שאין בו זרועות, גם חיינו יפים יותר, בלי מעשים וגבורות. פרקי ממני את שריון גופייתי המציבה. נלחמתי בכל האיברים, עד שהחשמל חבא, והיא תילתי.
It's done. It's done fighting.
I love שריון גופייתי.
Yeah. Did you notice that in, I don't know if this is really, but did you notice that in the image from the laptop that there was one of the things in the shop is a turtle shell? Yeah. Did you guys see that?
No, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the first line, I don't know, just, I thought of Venus de Milo.
Totally. Yeah, that's it.
That she doesn't need anything else. She doesn't have to do anything or move. She's just beautiful in and of itself.
Yeah.
I don't know how I thought it was like, you know, Roman statues that were destroyed from...
Yeah.
I was thinking more of the destruction than the beauty of it. That, you know, the Roman statues were destroyed from being sacked, or the Christians came by and destroyed the idols. Or
well, they all used to have arms.
Right, I know.
Right?
That's what I'm saying, but they got destroyed because of...
Well, they're not destroyed because they're still... The ones that we have until today without the arms that are in museums had arms, but are not demolished. They're... Just the arms broke off because that was the weakest point of the statue, and they're thousand, you know, they're very old.
Right, but some of them were found in ruins.
Yeah, of course, but I think that's more complicated.
Yeah.
A metaphor to think of that the statue is a statue, so it's not moving or doing anything, even if it had arms,
mm-hmm.
and that it's still. I mean, the ones especially. The males are more like this, but the women are sort of statuesque, as we call it, you know, and the arms are completely irrelevant in a way.
In their beauty,
to the statue, right? Like they still stand beautifully, and I think it's more complicated. Like because of this, armless statue is still beautiful.
But
and
they're not alive.
No, they're not alive,
they're not
doing deeds, and they never did.
The arms are the ones that do the deeds, and this whole, I had a very military moment here, of course, with the shiyon, and the sweat that you can sort of see yellowing the shirt underneath the body armor.
Or
right?
Like the Israeli soldier coming home on Shabbat to do his laundry.
Yeah,
right, exactly. And those deeds that are being done with the arms... You know, those military deeds, maybe those are the ones without which he thinks that life would be more beautiful, but it would also be an unliving statue, kind of.
Or the proposal, that's going back to Anim's Nerot, right? I mean, we have God's soles of his feet. We can't have God's Zroa Kodcho, right? No arm of power for him. There's
right.
no God who reveals
right, and that's
God's self in history.
Isn't that the word he uses, too?
Exactly. So, like, in a certain sense, like, look, I don't see God's arm. We can't see God's arm anymore. I don't see God's hand in history. Maybe life is better that way in a certain sense. I don't know. Maybe that's a possible...
So I was thinking about this. I had the image of a bunch of old guys sitting around the table talking into the wee hours of the night, solving all of the world's problems. Well, really, they can't do anything about the world's problems. They're going to solve them all until the lights go out because they're all sitting in their yellowing t-shirts
uh-huh.
just arguing about
uh-huh.
this is how we would do it if we were in charge, but they're not in charge. And then the lights go out, and his response to this is, v'hi tilati. And for this, I merit praise, because I got to put up with these guys who are all solving it.
Yeah, that's a beauty.
See, for those who see heroism in Israeli soldier,
there's no indication of that.
God, would you mind choosing someone else once in a while?
Right. Yeah.
We're beautiful enough as we are in our yellowing t-shirts. We don't need the sheer yellowing. We're done.
They're done. Uh-huh.
We don't need the arms. We want a simpler life.
And yeah, well, how do you understand the tone of the first two lines? Is this like, is he really like...
I mean, he's saying we're done.
We're done.
We're really...
We don't want to fight any more wars. We're better. We'd rather be live simply than be heroes. I think we'd rather live simply than be heroes.
You know, it's a sentiment I would hear from my kids when friends and family would visit and they just want to talk to them about what it's like to be a soldier in the Israeli army. And they'd say, I don't want to be in the army. I'm doing it because I have to.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather be going to college right now, like your kids did when they were 18.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different normalcy that they're looking for, and Amichai has a lot about normalcy.
Yeah.
It's not about being done. It's like saying, accept what is, less will be.
So I see a connection. So first of all, the Zerolot has been said about God's, but here it's also ours. It's the it is our limb of Masi.
Mm-hmm.
The Ein Banu Masim.
Exactly.
On this day. So here we are in a Pesalatik of the High Holidays.
Yeah.
Which is just sitting here and saying how we have no Masim.
Yeah.
And whatever, and continuing this. And of course he's juxtaposing this with this idea of the image of the Israeli who works, sweat, doing Masim, of building a country until the lights go out and all this kind of stuff. While singing, while others are in a synagogue singing how they have no masim, but they're not the ones doing the masim.
Mm.
I see the shirion here as much more actually literal, which is if you think of all of the t-shirts that Israelis wear, they are sleeveless, so therefore it is exactly the arms are missing where he no longer has the sleeve, so it is exactly what is protected. Is remains on him and the other has fallen off, so it is actually a literal shirion of the undershirt.
That works for me.
And the Abirim goes back to the pew.
Yes.
Yeah. The angels.
Yep.
Yeah. But here he's fighting them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now he gives up.
And therefore the Hashmal is the
consolation in a woman. As
okay, let's go on. Let's keep reading. Let's read the next paragraph. Do you want to read it?
The last one.
Yeah.
Tanuach datech datech atza ami bechol haderech, ve'achshav hi ayefa ve'ein ba od erech, ani ro'eh otach. Forgetting. Motzia dvar min hamkarer. Mu'eret metocho beor shme'olam achar. Vehi tehilati, vehi tehilato, vehi tehilatach. Or tehilatach.
We're
correct.
Okay. What happens then? What do you think about this last stanza? What is going on? All of a sudden, you have the introduction of this female, second person, singular person.
I feel like there's often an introduction of a female at the end of his poems.
He
brings it, like, the way lofty, you know, ideas. She's also taking something from the refrigerator, just BTW. It's Yom Kippur in this poem.
Perhaps.
So,
could be Rosh Hashanah.
I thought we decided, it's Days of Awe. Okay. Yeah. Anyways, because we keep talking about Yom Kippur. So I think I didn't get this when we were reading it at all, only from the analysis we've done now. It's all the searching for these lofty things and all the problems of the country and of the Jewish people and history and war and Jerusalem and Rome. And in the end, it's just the love in this, you know, this woman that he has in a domestic scene, and the elevation of that domesticity with this, she opens the fridge and a light from the fridge shines on her face, and it has a otherworldly quality or a divine quality, and that's enough. That that for the creations that we have and for this love that he has, that it's all he needs.
So according to the pewt.org site, it is Yom Kippur. This is recited in Ashkenazim and Yom Kippur.
There we go.
You were talking about
the original pewt.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it is Yom Kippur.
Hmm. Any date?
That was a very lofty ending to my lofty
very
speech.
Very good. It's either the Mechasimoto la Rabbi Elazar Barabi Kalir, Viesh Mechasimoto la Yanai. So 6th or 7th century.
Mm. Well, that's
cool. Yeah.
Definitely predates
something. So preceded.
A couple of years.
So
also just that Ziv Shoneh, I was thinking that's such a, it's a similar, image there that he's clearly playing on. Instead of it being the Moshe's shining face from Sinai, it's a woman's shining face from the fridge.
From the fridge light. It's such like
it's a divine,
it's
like a very divine, and it's all calm, like he's not unhappy anymore.
And this feels like, Jamie, it goes back to, like, you wanted to keep pushing the sincere reading of, like, but this is our world. And this is, like, I feel that on this stanza of, like, okay, so we don't have, like, the light that is out there, this, like, but, like, we have the light of the refrigerator. We have this, like, light
that's
that has its
got.
Other quality. And, like,
and I have her.
And for
and
this
enough.
Love,
this,
this is your Thela.
Well, and it's all from God. So, in the end, he gives up on the grandiose vision and just accepts that what he has in his kitchen is what he was looking for all along.
It just occurred to me that I didn't notice this. Maybe you all noticed this. Chorshe Resha, at the very end of the quote that you gave us, goes back to the first line that we had, right?
What are you looking at?
At the piyut.
Yeah.
It says, "Va'avita ti'ila mizohar kaveh miziv shoneh
mi'chorshe
Resha." Right, and he says, "Ani choresh kilayim."
You know, I didn't give you the full pew. Now I wonder if it's
wow. There's like a lot of, but clearly,
all the
so he's playing. I don't. There's this translation. I don't really understand how that contemplates wickedness. But just a naive reading of choresh resha, somebody who is sowing wickedness, which is choresh kilayim.
Right.
And he's wetting the kilayim, so he's choreshing.
Yeah.
Is that also sowing?
Choresh is to plow, but here the translation is contemplate. I don't know quite why, but it's the same. It's the same word. I mean, that's why
they're taking the metaphor and putting it into.
Yeah, or maybe he doesn't have, you know, for his Israeli reading, lachosh is to plow, so he just put it in choresh kilayim.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Wow,
nice.
Okay. Overall, I feel like we just went through a journey.
I'm exhausted.
You?
This poem was like so.
What is your like? I don't know. Do people have like the thing in the multitude of images? Is there like a thing, a feeling, a sentence, a meaning that you're gonna like take away from this?
God on the back under the car.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tinkering.
Better the refrigerator light.
It's just. Yeah, that's
what did you say?
So that image is the Tmuna Menatzeach.
Yeah.
And it's the that comes out that
the
sticks.
Sweaty undershirt.
A bit of frustration.
Frustration in what sense?
The sweaty undershirt.
Well, it's left unresolved.
I just resolved it for you. I just resolved it.
Candy's
so
easy.
You
feel unresolved in that.
It is
you
God
feel like
who was wearing the undershirt, obviously, because God's the mechanic. We put it all together.
There you go.
I'm going to go dress give
it
more.
This was a hard one. I have to say it's one of the hardest ones of his I've ever had. It's been a while, but it was hard.
Had any of you
never heard this one before?
I really did. I don't. I just liked it because it was like so rich, and I felt like there was so much potential, and its
that's
relationship
great.
To the pewt I thought was really exciting.
Yeah.
But every time I like was preparing the source for this, I was like, why did I choose this poem? Like, there's so many
it's
more
hard.
Poems that are so much more easily accessible
yeah.
than this one. But
that's great. Good choice.
How did
that's
you discover
great
the
pewt?
How did you discover the relationship to the pewt?
For one, just because of the repeated sort of stanza, I assume that it must be connected to something. And I'm not so brilliant. In the commentary of the book, it said that it was.
It's
I mean,
great,
it said that
book.
There was a pew from so that.
I
like,
recommend the book.
When
yeah,
digging
into
my Machzor, and I was able to find
like
the book is
yeah.
Creator.
Yeah.
Are
you
listening?
Huh?
Creator,
are
you listening?
Israeli.
You could get
it
on Amazon.
Does anyone else want it to say? Vehi Tefilati, Vehi Tefilat. Like every time.
Lecha Adonai at Red Sun.
Yeah, I keep
yes.
hearing it
in my
like,
head.
Vehi Tefilati every
yep.
time.
I've been hearing it as well.
I feel like it's gonna say that.
In our last 3 minutes, in which it makes no sense to actually read a new poem with you, I do want to share one poem with you. Just because I've been thinking about this line from this poem all day, so maybe even if we don't spend a ton of time talking about it, maybe you'll like the one line
which
of the poem. So it's on page 8. It's Rivka Miriam, also modern Israeli poet, born in the 50s. So, well, just, I don't know, maybe someone wants to just read it in the Hebrew, and then I'll tell you my favorite line.
ואת האדמה שרוצה בהם לגעת. בראשית ברא אלוהים חוטים מתוחים ביניהם, בין השמיים שבעצם אינם, ובין האדמה המשוועת. ואת האדם הוא יצר שהאיש הוא תפילה והוא חוט, נוגע במה שאיננו, במגע של רוח ודקות.
Will someone read it in the English now?
In the beginning, God created the heavens that actually are not, and the earth that wants to touch them. In the beginning, God created threads stretched between them, between the heavens that actually are not, and the earth that cries for help. And he created man, for a person is a prayer and a thread touching what is not with a soft and delicate touch.
Wow. So obviously we could spend so much more time on this
poem
too. But I just love the poem that I thought if we read it a couple times, I would at least give you the poem as a small parting gift. And just I'll point out a couple of things quickly for you to think about on your way. Obviously, the resonance of Bereshit Bara Elohim at the Shemaim Shebe'etz Meinam, and then in here instead of Haaretz you have Adama, and so the switch to what you make of the switch from Haaretz to Adama, and the connection between Adama and Adam, and this idea of this Shemaim, the sense of like reaching for something that at once you both want to be there that is not there. But the line that I really give this to you for is Shehaish hu tvila v'uchut. The whole day I just kept thinking about, even when I was davening today, I was thinking about like what does it mean to for a person to be a prayer and a thread, and what does it mean like in our lives as we're in the world to be a prayer.
Well, the
and
poem
a
before kind of answers that to some degree.
Yeah.
The Yoram Michai poem?
Yeah, right before that you put in here. I say with perfect faith that prayers preceded God. Prayers created God. God created man. Man creates prayers that create God, who creates man.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they talk to each other a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, is this wishful thinking, or could Einam also be the mystical Ein?
Hmm.
Why not?
That,
I give it to
God
you
is,
for
God
you,
God
Larry.
What
God, I want a shred of hope, but I'm totally depressed.
But like God is no thing.
It's just
right?
The idea.
Like,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The
yeah, yeah.
whole team come up twice in that.
Yeah.
They come up, there's the kind of primordial threads.
Yeah.
Whatever, not the primordial, but the original threads.
Yeah.
And then we come in, I guess, as replacement threads.
Yeah.
Hold,
so good.
To hold earth and heavens
hold
together.
The space.
Yeah.
Or the earth and the heavens
yeah.
That's
part of what
or
I hear, that
space
I'm hearing that as Bereshit Bara Elohim. In the beginning, there were these chutim that was connecting
right.
us, and then something happened to them, and now there's us.
Right.
Now we have to be the chutim.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for diving in. Thank you.
That was great.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. To learn more with Hadar, please visit hadar.org/Torah.